What up? Another episode of the Connected Show, connected with Ruben Torres. Today I am hanging with Aaron M. Sanchez, and Aaron is he's a broadcaster, journalist, someone that I'm always checking out and trying to learn from, at least from a distance. And I'm over here like, man, you know, Aaron is doing his thing. I wanna learn as much as I can, soak up the game from him. He drops a whole lot of knowledge here on this episode. Aaron is doing a radio show on KMET on ABC 1490 AM. He's got another thing. He's got going the morning show. He's executive producer of the Hollywood Social Lounge. He's doing another show live with Aaron and Kelly. He's just got his hands in all kinds of stuff. And today we have the honor of soaking up game in the industry. And I learned a lot from this episode, even just on and off the air from this recording. He's a guy that I want to kind of stick closer to and continue to learn, because dude is knowledgeable and he's an awesome guy, and he's climbing up the ranks, man. So I love everything this guy has to say. Anybody that's interested in getting involved in the industry, you're going to learn a lot from this episode. Make sure you stick around for the whole entire episode. Today's episode is brought to you by Milton Motion. My boy Tim Hernandez doing his thing. Photography, video, building websites, producing podcasts, doing everything. He's got a whole lot of stuff going on, but I'm sure he always has time to help other people do some stuff. Make sure you reach out to him, MiltonMotion.com. Let's get into this episode with Aaron M. Sanchez. Get connected.
Yo, if you're C-O-N-E-C-T-A-D-O, you already know about the show, so let's go. It's your music and lifestyle, fashion profile, the entertainment source for everything you want to know about. North to the south, the east to the west side, stay connected with Ruben Torres worldwide, so let's go. Across the globe, well respected, beasting on the industry. Connected.
Aaron, how you doing, sir?
I am doing great. How are you?
Doing good, doing good. Thank you for taking the time to hang with me and do this interview. I know you're a busy man.
Absolutely. Well, it's first of all an honor to be on here. Thank you for asking, and I'm excited.
No, you know, I follow you online, and I see you're doing a whole lot of cool stuff, and to me, I'm like, man, this is where I want to get to the level that that Aaron's on. So I was like, man, you know, I'd love to have him on the show and you know, pick his brain a little bit.
Well, look, you're already there. You just don't know it yet.
There you go. You know, we're talking a little bit, off the air here, and you gave me so much information that I feel like you're going to send me a bill now, because I learned so much now. I soaked up the game from you here. So, you know.
No, I would never charge you for it unless you package it and resell it, then I just ask for a little percentage coming back my way. That's all I ask.
Yeah, a little cut your way. So
yeah, exactly. 10%, that's all.
So I know you got like a ton of stuff going on. You know, you do the Hollywood Social Lounge, plus you got the morning show. You got a lot of stuff going on. Can you break down some of the shows that you got going on right now?
Yeah, absolutely. So I do a daily morning show on ABC News Radio, KMET, 1490 AM. And that daily show is with my co-host, Brett Malik and Mia Mocha. And we just cover everything, you know, whatever's happening in the days, and have some really good guests. Tomorrow we have James Patterson, and I'm excited about that. But we have fun with that. And then I produce another show called The Hollywood Social Lounge, which is an entertainment show which covers and features filmmakers, producers, actors, red carpets, and the like. And that's on weekends at 10 a.m. And then I produce another show called Two Men in Your Business with my co-host. I'm sorry, let me go back, otherwise she'll hurt me. Kelly Dolan is my co-host on the Hollywood Social Lounge. And then my other co-host for the Two Men in Your Business is Jesse Torres, and we cover a lot of entrepreneur stuff, which we're repackaging that for television distribution. So, yeah, some pretty busy things.
Tell me more about that one, the Two Men in the Business. Is that geared towards, is that Latino based, or is that what's the basis of that one?
Well, you know, when you say like geared, there's always the element of when you say Latino, like, you know, I'm Latino. So that kind of is the thing, is that our focus, we like to keep things always multicultural, right?
Yes.
I never like to exclude any other. So I don't ever just say, oh, it's just Latino. No, yeah. You know, so we'll have entrepreneurs of all different backgrounds. And so now it just so happens that Jesse Torres and myself happen to be Latino. And that's just the way it happens.
Yeah.
But, you know, I think it's important to. And, you know, it's funny, on the flip side of that, I've heard people, especially from ladies, say, well, how come it's not two men and two women in your business? And you know, it just happened to be that way. It wasn't like we planned it. We've just known each other for 5-6 years now. And we wanted to create a show. It was Money Talk with Jesse Torres. And then we repackaged it. And it just happened to be Two Men in Your Business. So it's nothing against the ladies, nothing against non-Latino. It's for everybody, but it is an entrepreneurial show.
That's awesome. Now, and you're doing the morning show. So you got pretty much all formats. You got TV, you got radio. Tell me about some of the differences in production when you do TV versus radio.
Well, I mean, the first and foremost is radio or anything audio, right? I think of it in two ways, audio and video. So you've got audio, like the morning show is super easy because, you know, we plan for it. We prepare, we get the interview scheduled and everything. But then when we're on, all we have to worry about is the quality of the audio, right? Our sound engineer takes care of the callers that call in, the breaks, the commercials, everything is done and packaged and ready to go by the end of the show. Then it goes to podcast and moves on beyond that. And where it goes, we sometimes never know. Video is more intensive, right? So you've got the cameras that you work on with the two or three cameras. You've got the editing that needs to be done. You've got the editing takes a lot more time on video than it does audio, right? You know this.
Yeah.
So you got to prepare for that. You got to do the lighting proper. You got to make sure that everything's white balanced proper. There's a lot more time and effort that goes into video, but it's, as I say, and as I told you, it's well worth it because we live in an age where people are not just listening now to radio or podcasts. They're watching and consuming so much content online and television and new digital media and now Instagram and Twitter. Everything is video, visual centric. So people are watching radio now. I remember there was a time when we would show up with a video camera to places. They would say, well, you're ABC News Radio, you're NBC News Radio. And we're like, well, yes, but we also new media, like we create content for online. So it's a different paradigm that I think even the radio stations are starting to get into, thinking, okay, I need to create video for this, not just the audio portion. So in all of our productions, we try to keep, you know, it multi-level on video and audio. That way we can go and send it to a television network. Or it can go online and live on, you know, beyond the actual one time that it is aired.
And how do you feel that that all these new digital platforms have changed the industry for broadcasting?
How do I feel about it? I love it because it gives everybody, you know, it takes away, you know, just like music, right? There's a different industry of music. Musicians, you used to have to be signed to a label in order to get distribution. Yeah. So you'd have to either be discovered or know somebody and then hope that they promote and they would take the money and send it out. Now with online and other types of formats of distribution, it gives people the control of what they want to listen to, right? Mm-hmm. So if there's something, let's say the radio station, you know, is playing music you just don't care for, what kind of music do you like?
I like a little bit of hip hop, rock, reggae.
Okay, so let's say you feel like reggae today. You can go and pop up any reggae channel, right?
Yep.
And you have that flexibility. That is great to the consumer, but it's also great to the people producing it because you can find people in specific areas of interest and open the world to them if you know how to do that. Now, with the flip side of that, because there's so much to watch and so many different channels, the strategy is a little bit different than, okay, we're just going to broadcast and help people discover us. Now, there's a flip side of how are you as a content creator going to find that person that is interested in your type of content? How are they going to discover you? And that is the challenge.
Yeah. Yeah, you were saying earlier, that bit of nugget, the nugget of information that you're saying, you know, you can have a million listeners, but, you know, you need the right one, that one, you know, listener that's going to help take you or launch you to the next level. And I think, yeah, I think that's a definite key for anybody, you know, trying to get in the industry. You know, here I am, I'm doing podcasts and I'm learning everything from, you know, watching everybody else. And, you know, I studied like, I want to say like 4 or 5 months before I even launched my, my podcast, you know, staying up late and losing sleep, just trying to figure out how these guys are doing it so that when I come out, I can come out with the bang. Was there anything that before you started that, you know, anything that, that might've influenced you or anybody that you were watching or you were saying, you know, I want to follow in the lead of this guy, anybody like that?
Let me think of that. I think there's a lot of people I admire in how they work the business side of it. You know, I when I first came into this, I didn't go to school for it. So like yourself, I had to self-teach myself, right? Self-taught. I was self-taught on, well, how does this work and how does that work? And then I would just do it. So, I didn't know anything at the very beginning about, you know, cameras and switchers and editing, but I had to learn all that. Then, and that was back in the day of MySpace, and we had programming that was streamed online. This was kind of before YouTube. And then YouTube came out. I was like, oh, YouTube's great because you can put up your content there. And so I jumped on that right away. And I learned, okay, well, how does YouTube work? But it's evolved over the years, of course. And we've seen that evolve, but I had to learn as I went. Then I didn't know anything about radio until I got into radio. And once I got into radio, then I asked a lot of questions about, well, how does radio work? And then I didn't know anything about podcasting, but I had to learn, well, how does podcasting work? But then I combine all of them because I always say, if you're in one avenue, that's great. But we do live in an age, if you're on, let's say just if you're on podcasting, that you want to be on video, you want to be on YouTube, you want to be on Facebook, you want to, because Facebook now has good video. Twitter has now up their ante. Now they have their video as well, even if it's 30 seconds. So you can have a teaser of your show on Twitter for 30 seconds. You have a teaser on Instagram of 15 seconds to point to your podcast, right?
Right.
Or to your video broadcast. Mm-hmm. And so we have these different avenues that are all free, but it takes the time to do it. But if you have a system in place, you create your 15 second on Instagram, you create your 30 second on Twitter, you create your teaser on for Facebook, and also then YouTube. Now you've got all of these and they all line up. You've now done what they call transmedia. You've gone through all the different media platforms and pointed them to where you want, which ultimately is your website, where you have the ability to capture them, you know, hold on to your audience members, maybe capture their email address, and now you've got a subscription, or at least people that you're tied to, right? And that's the name of the game, tie into people that are interested in what you have to offer.
And have you ventured out into any of that? I know, you know, we spoke briefly about you know, you kind of had a little seminar kind of conference to teach people what you do. Is that something you're going to jump into a little more?
You know, you're making me think about it. You know, I did it about a year ago because it was asked of me, you know, some questions were asked. And I said, you know, I'm just going to go and do a seminar. I did. I opened it up to those in the Burbank area of California. And I said, come on down to the studio and I'll give you an hour seminar. And from that, 30 people showed up and they all just were like, the response was really good because I just kind of gave, you know, what podcasting was, how it works with radio, and how to get to that next level of going big. And my purpose, though, wasn't to charge. My purpose was to impart knowledge to people that really have an interest. And down the line, I know we would align, you know, together at some point, which, funny enough, it actually opened up like 3 opportunities for myself from people that were there. And it was kind of that giving, and then it just kind of came back my way, if that makes sense. So yeah. I feel sometimes the things that you throw out into the universe and helping people will just happen to come back your way for good or for bad, right?
Right.
And that's what happened. So, and then about 4 months ago, I said, well, I don't have time to actually go and create a thing where they come back. Well, maybe I'll do it online and just do an hour thing and have people sign up for that. And I did that as well. But again, it's like, where do I put my energy at? So I don't know, but you're making me think about it. I'm really like, oh, I didn't realize people charge $1,500 for services like this. And here I am just giving it away. But
no,
yeah,
even more
universe pays in much bigger ways.
Yeah. Yeah. No. And you know what? There isn't, you know, and I'm not trying to offend anybody by saying this, but there isn't a lot of people in the industry that think the way that you do by, you know, helping out and kind of, you know, dropping down that knowledge to those that that are you know, waiting to get to that next level, or you know, there's young guys, entrepreneurs that are hungry to get to a level where you're at, and they just need somebody to kind of point them in the right direction or hold their hand through some stuff. And I know that's not necessarily what you're trying to do, but just to even sit with somebody over the phone or whatever it may be, and for you to open up and just give them everything you've learned, there isn't many people that would do what you do.
Well, and I think that needs to change. You know, you mentioned earlier Latinos, right? And I will say a lot of opportunities, and I've said this before, a lot of opportunities that have come to me have come from people that are non-Latino. I have asked some that happen to be Latino, and they just happen to be, you know, for advice, and I've kind of been shut down a couple of times. So I know what it's like to want to know the information, but people hold back from it as though it is something privileged and given to them and only to them, and they want you to go through the whole process of the years, perhaps, that it'll take to get to that quick information they could have helped you with. And I've always said, you know, there is. For all of us, whoever we are, whatever nationality we are, there is plenty of business out there to be had. If you've received free, and I've been given some time from people, I've granted, I took a lot of the initiative on my own and went out there and got it. But hey, if I can give a little bit of something to inspire you to move forward in the life and inspire others, then that's what we should, that to me is what should motivate at least those that I surround myself with.
Yeah. And
does that make sense?
Yeah. And it's almost kind of like it's something we should be doing. And some of these people just, you know, I've been around it too. And some people are just like, well, you know, I went to school for this, so, you know, maybe you should too, or whatever. And I'm like, cool. Not all those for that privilege.
Well, see, and I didn't go to school for that. I didn't go. I wanted to go to school. I wanted to, but that wasn't my path. And in some ways, I think maybe it was better for me not to have gone to school because I had to learn things as I was going. So I had to learn the processes, and it's made me a much stronger producer now to know the video aspect, to know the audio aspect, to know, you know, to have to be hands-on instead of just letting other people do certain things or being taught this is the way you do it. And because I'm not put into a box of, well, this is the way it's done. So I do think multi-level of it, right?
Yeah.
But so in that way, I feel blessed that way. but I know it took me many years to learn all that. And but if you're going to use it, just use it and implement it. Don't sit there and say, well, I want to do this, but and ask 20 other questions. No, you have the basis of it. Go and do it, and you'll learn the rest as you need to learn. The things will come to you that are supposed to, if this is what you are meant to do. And I believe you, because I heard some of your interviews, you are meant to do this.
Wow, that means a lot. Thank you. Yeah, and you know, you're mentioning my voice earlier, and I've never heard that, you know, what you were telling me. And, you know, I usually think...
Well, hold on. The audience doesn't know what we're talking about. But what I said very specifically was that your voice is like what I would listen on jazz radio. Like, it's very soothing. It's very calming. I feel relaxed when I listen. I'm like, I want to hear more of that voice to calm my spirits down when I am frustrated at the day. Like, you calm me down. Does that make sense?
Yeah, that's an honor. That's, you know, to me, I always think, I got a face for radio. And I never really thought about the voice aspect of it, but you know, maybe I gotta.
You know, and take that. I hear that so many times when people say, "I've got a face for radio." Get that out of your head. Get that. Just throw that out. Like, you know, I don't know who started that mentality, but I, you know, because it, what it says is, and what that mentality comes to is, I am not good enough for video. And I need to only be on audio. Yeah. Now, I get it. It's easier.
Yeah.
Audio is so much easier to do, to just focus on your voice and come in to the station with your hair unkempt. You didn't shower for days. you know, you're wearing a barrel around as you know, clothing. That's fine. That's who you want to be. But, you know, you dress sharp. You have a good image. People want to see the man behind the voice.
Yeah, I'm going to have to keep that in mind. Well, you know, I started a few years back doing video interviews, and I transitioned into the podcast thing because of, you know, some of the stuff that I was learning. So, and now, you know, talking to you today, I'm going to have to kind of switch up the formats here a little bit and get back into video. So,
yeah, just and it's not getting back. It's just adding it on as a component, right?
Yeah.
So, because the audio portion is the easiest part to strip, put that to the side, and make it for a podcast. That's the easiest edit ever. It's the video that takes a little longer, and I understand when you do that. But look at how many doors you open up. You open up YouTube. You could do YouTube Live. You could do Facebook Live. You could do Facebook Video, and it lasts longer to the audience that doesn't listen online, but they want to. Like, they just are visual people, you know?
Yeah, we live in a
visual
society.
And that's not guaranteed that they're going to just watch you, but they might listen to you still on the background, but they have the video on their computer or on their, you know, mobile device.
Yeah. And, you know, everything's switching towards that now. And, you know, to me, I love being kind of, you know, in the back scenes. I love to put stuff together and produce, but, you know, now I'm kind of gearing more towards, you know, and I've been, you know, studying a couple other people, and I'm like, man, you know, yeah, I just had a meeting about building a set and just bringing some people down to San Diego and just creating, you know, a show that's a real show, you know, not that this isn't, but I'm saying, you know, something, stepping it up to the next level as far as visual. So yeah, we'll see where that takes us. But,
that's your obvious next step. Like, you have to do that. But whether you keep, you know, always, even if it's a new, you know, people say, well, why do you produce several shows? Well, because the opportunities are given to me, but so I can remain control of certain other shows, right? Mm-hmm. So, you know, maybe you want to keep the podcast as a podcast. Maybe you want to create a new show, but don't let go of your original.
Yeah.
You know, because you'll always own that. But or if you can add on to it, then add on to it and give a different scene of it. But you're doing some great things. And I've, you know, seen some of your interviews, like I said, and you know, I want to see more. I just want to see it on video.
Nice. No, thank you. Thank you. And, you know, you were mentioning that you didn't go to school for this. So what made you want to get into broadcast?
Well, it's, I really wanted to just do voiceovers, to be very honest. Like, when I wanted to get into the industry, I just thought, oh, I will do voiceovers and I can learn that. I didn't think that I was going to ever be in radio. That wasn't, I was exposed to it when I had gone to a school that actually taught radio and television. And I was given the tour there, and they told me of a couple people that had gone there. One of them was Roxy, and they said this like I was supposed to know who Roxy was at the time. And I didn't know who she was at the time, but I was like, okay. And I just didn't go that path. I ended up going a completely different path where I ended up having to learn all the process. And it actually took my uncle to tell me, hey, you need to be in front of the camera, because I just was doing stuff behind the camera for another production. And I said, really? I said, well, thank you. And he was the reason I then stepped in front of the camera, because he took the camera. He followed me everywhere. He does to this day. And he is the reason I do what I do. But like I said, it took somebody else to believe in me in order for me to do what I'm doing even now. So, and then every step along the way was another step to being seen more. You know, then it was YouTube, and then people discovered me on YouTube, including a TV network at the time, and then the radio station that I had been at previous, the bureau chief of that station saw some of my interviews, but he met me in person. Then he looked online and saw some of the entertainment interviews we had been doing, and then offered me a small segment on the station. And then each step along the way, things just took me to broadcasting.
Wow. So what was the first steps for you? Was it radio? And then you started doing the morning show, or what was the process for you?
Well, I did the morning show. I had a small segment, which was like it was a 5 to 10 minute entertainment segment, because they asked me to be an entertainment segment person. So I would come on once a week and I did the entertainment segment. And it was great, because I had never done it before. And I thought, okay, well, I will learn, right? I didn't say I didn't know how to do it. I just learned as I went. I would look and observe other people that had done things. I didn't even know what I was going to cover. And so I think it took a good, 6 to 8 months to really get the hang of that. But it was additional experience. I was still doing other things. I was still doing other content, but I was able to do this once a week. Then that led to an opportunity to have my own hour show. And at that time I created what's called Live with Aaron and Kelly. And we did an hour show, which was all entertainment, because I was able to do a weekly show on that. Then that regular show, we got moved over to ABC News Radio, KNET. We took our show, rebranded it to the Hollywood Social Lounge, and then an opportunity came up for me to host the morning show daily. And so I took that, and at the same time still creating, other content with Two Men in Your Business and that show, and just trying to, again, keeping busy with all platforms and all the opportunities that were coming my way.
And through this journey, what was your aha moment where you're like, man, this is what I want to do for the rest of my life? Cause you just jumped into it, and then, you started growing as opportunities came, but there had to have been one moment where you knew, this is what I want to do for the rest of my life.
That's a good question, because I've never actually asked myself that. I think you go on autopilot of, you're doing these things. Look, you know what? It actually happened when somebody pointed it to me, and I don't think I was completely cognizant of where I was at in life. I was just going through the motion of, okay, this thing, that thing happens, and I would find that things, quite bluntly, kind of things and opportunities always open, the doors were always open to me, if that makes sense. And so it was at that point that somebody said, when opportunities and things come at you very easily, that means that you are meant to do that. Does that make sense?
Yeah, definitely. Definitely.
And when things come at you very easily like that, then you need to go to that next level. You need to own that.
Right.
And it was at that point that I said, oh, okay. Because I had been doing some other things. I was doing, you know, I was trying to learn real estate at the time. And, you know, I was kind of focused on several things, right? I wasn't just focused on the radio aspect, even though I had a weekly show. Because I come from sales and marketing, so I had my sales background. And it was at that point when I said, oh, I need to put all of my energy into this, because things do happen to come that way. Plus, I enjoy it.
Yeah.
I love it.
And you're good at it.
Right? And people automatically say, well, if you love it, you enjoy it. Like, it should come kind of as a natural, like, oh, that makes sense, then do that. But it didn't come that natural to me. It was like, okay, I enjoy it. It's a great hobby. Let me just do it as a hobby, and I will try to make my money elsewhere. But when I started to go, oh, wait, I need to focus on this and really make a career out of it, I think that was the pivotal time for me, the change of saying, well, if things have come to my way very easily, there's got to be a reason. There's a path that I need to take, and I'm not going to fight it anymore. I'm going to go with it.
Wow. And at that point, were you thinking, okay, I gotta study some of the greats and see what these other great broadcasters were doing, and kind of learn kind of from what they did and from what they didn't do?
You know, I took talk radio a little bit more serious. In other words, like, I went from listening to, you know, hip hop and the music, and I'm like, okay, I'm gonna listen to AM radio. I listen to how these professionals do it. Yes, you know, I would listen to, you know, how they introed. I would listen to how they would transition, and I mean, I would listen to myself too, because I wanted to critique myself. I always tell people, and new broadcasters and new podcasters, listen to your shows. Sometimes you don't want to, but you will be your best critic, and it's better than somebody else criticizing you. It's better that you criticize yourself, hear where you're wrong, hear where you're right. And as you improve, it's just like if you drew and you started as a kindergartner and then you graduated and you know, first grade, second grade, fourth grade. Well, by the time you're in high school as a senior, you look back at those drawings and you see your progress. But you don't just draw it and then forget it. You have to go and look at it again, right?
Right.
See how you've improved and how you can make improvement. So I always say, I think even though I listen to others, I pay attention to the shows in order to improve upon each one.
Now, you know, and me, I'm kind of learning as I go here as well. And, you know, I try to kind of get in the groove and I'm having a conversation as far as the interviews. But, you know, I'm kind of learning more, you know, everybody kind of has their own style. But would you say that there's a science behind interviewing, like some kind of psychology behind asking questions and the type of questions and how you ask them?
I will say it depends on the show. It depends on the format of the show. So there are some shows that are very structured, right? And there are things that somebody is trying to promote, like maybe it's an author or maybe it is an actor with a film that you want to structure your questions in such a way that will bring that, whatever they're trying to promote, to the best ability, right?
Mm-hmm.
And some shows are like that. So they're very structured. You want to be careful of the questions that you ask. You don't want to get into their life. You know, maybe they have some pretty public information that they're hoping you won't ask. You know, depending on your show, maybe that's your style. And maybe you've chosen to be that. Maybe you're the Howard Stern. You know, you want to be that person, then you have to own that and you have to just ask the questions as they come. But if it's a structured show or an entrepreneurial show, then there's certain structure of questions. Now, with that being said, your show is pretty open. I think I did the other podcast with your friends at the Atomic Podcast, and it's very open. Like, it's just kind of a conversation between two people.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know that there's a psychology of asking questions, other than there are certain types of people that will answer differently.
Right.
And I mean that, like, some are not very open. They don't want to be open, and you're struggling.
Oh, yeah.
Then put them at ease, right? So, right. So what I have done, like, on certain interviews is I have found that the psychology of starting off with a fun question will set the pace of the rest of the interview, whether it's a 10-minute interview, which I think the longest interview I'll have is, like, half an hour. But I will do – I'll set the pace for it, so to speak. So if we have a fun show, then I want to ask a fun question at the top, because the caller now knows, because he hasn't met me before, hasn't listened to me before, knows that it's a fun show.
Yeah. No, that's definitely a good point.
That's something I discovered just by doing, when we ask serious questions promoting things, and they then stay in this very, like, serious mode of where you're like, oh, like, you try to joke around, and now it's a little awkward.
Yeah, it's a little too serious.
Yeah. Right, exactly.
Now, as far as getting in the business, what would you say are some of the challenges that anybody faces when they get in the business, learning the industry? What are some of the challenges?
Getting into the industry?
Yeah. And staying in the industry.
Yourself. Yourself is your first challenge.
Okay.
People don't acknowledge that till I didn't acknowledge that till later. You know, for example, limiting beliefs sometimes are your own challenge. Like, just certain belief systems that need to change. So you first it's yourself. Believe that you can do it, and that you can. And if you don't believe, surround yourself with people that believe in you, that see your potential. And then the next step of that, the other challenge is, you know, getting out of your comfort zone, pushing yourself past your comfort zone. Sometimes the biggest connections I've made are when I pushed myself into, like, a networking situation or a place where I got to meet other people, or sometimes it was something I didn't even really want to do, but I knew I had to do. Maybe it was an organization or an event. And, you know, because I can be kind of reserved when I'm in public places, right? When you don't know people, when you go to somewhere, you don't know anybody. I think that's kind of natural for a good percentage of people.
Yeah.
So push yourself beyond your comfort zone. And then, and that can be a challenge, because we're happy with where we're at. We're happy with, you know, people come to us, and we don't get nervous. But once you push yourself and then you see the benefits of that, I think those are the first sets of challenges. The other challenges, I think, are maybe you're trying to knock on doors that aren't meant to be open to you.
Yeah.
And that's fine. Be open to getting the no, but moving on past that. So get the yes, get to the yes. Like I said, I come from sales, so I've been used to getting a lot of no's before you get yes. If all you need are more, sometimes the one yes that you need, or more yeses that are aligned with what you're doing. But you'll never know if you don't ask.
Right.
Some people don't ask. You know, they just sit there and hope opportunities come to them. Because when I think about it, yes, opportunities came from me, but I also asked for it, right? I ask, well, what does this take, or what does that take? And then the person knows, well, oh, I'm interested, and then they give the opportunity, right?
Yeah.
So I think a lot of challenges with people, it isn't so much outside challenges as it is, it starts with the person and their belief system of feeling that they can do what they're setting out to do. Sometimes it isn't that case. Sometimes the challenges are real. Like, your car breaks down. That's a challenge.
Oh, yeah.
But how are you going to overcome it? You're going to get it fixed.
Yeah.
And if you view it like that, you view every, whatever challenge you call it, it's like, well, okay, how do I overcome it? And you do that.
Yeah. And you know, being in San Diego and you being in L.A., it almost seems like, you know, always being in San Diego is a little more challenging than having the fingertip, you know, having the industry at the fingertips when you're in LA. But what about staying relevant in the business?
Um, like, what do you mean? Like, saying how to stay relevant?
Yeah, like...
Always be producing something. Here's what I tell even actors. I tell radio personalities, if you can, try to think like a producer, because now you are in the chair of the decision making. You're creating opportunities for yourself, and there'll be opportunities that come up to you because of the relationships that you have for to be brought onto other productions, and those are good. Like, you take those, but always think like a producer. Create content, create your ability to make a show, and you will never be without a job if you're constantly creating things. With that being said, you're always relevant because you're always producing something.
Right.
So you don't rest. That's why I said, like, you know, keep maybe do the radio show, but don't let your other thing die down. Don't let the podcasting thing die down, right?
Yeah.
Always keep something. And there have been times where maybe, you know, a station, I had to switch a station at a time, but I kept the content going. Like, you know, whether even if it wasn't on television at one point, but I kept it going on radio. So keep things going, keep creating content. And if you have a camera, that's half the battle. A lot of these people that are listening to this show probably are like, well, you know, I can get the podcast equipment, but I don't have a camera. Well, then go and get a camera. Like, cameras are a lot easier and a lot less expensive. And if you have the funds, do it. If you need to borrow the funds, then do it. But that might be a challenge, but you can overcome it. You can do it if you want to.
Right. And as far as being a producer and always being producing, and you're hosting your own shows, how important is branding and branding your name when it comes to producing?
I heard this overheard about me. Somebody said to somebody else, you know, oh, he's always concerned about the branding. And I said, yes, branding is always something you need to do. Because, for example, you want your name to shine beyond the one. You don't want it to always be tied to one production. If that makes sense, because you are your own brand, right?
Yep.
I agree. Now you are branding the stage, the program to be what it is, but you are ultimately branding you. Now, when you're with a radio station, you're branding that show as well. But if that opportunity ends up going by the wayside, where are you going to go next? Well, if you've branded you, then you can go elsewhere. It's an easy hop, jump, and a skip to the next program, right? Or to another radio station, or to a television station if you want to. And if people know what you do, then you've grounded that. So branding is very important, and you do so the way you've already done it. Like, you've got your photos, you've got your social media handles, but I've even told personalities, you know, yes, you may have like let's say you have the we have the morning show, but you want to make sure you have your own Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram, and now Snapchat is another one. But make sure you have that branded to you, not to this show only.
Yes, I agree. Yeah, it's a big deal, and you know, I'm sure you get this a lot, but you know, there's Aaron Sanchez the chef, and there's Aaron M. Sanchez you now. How important does that play a role in branding yourself? Because this guy's branding the crap out of himself as a chef, and you know what I'm saying? So how do you...
Look, as much as he brands himself, I still get his fans coming my way. They will ask me, you know, they'll say, well, I went to the restaurant the other day, but you weren't there. Or they'll say, oh, I saw you in Atlanta, or... So, look, I still get his people, and I think that's hilarious, because we don't, I mean, other than us both being Latino, we really don't look alike. I don't have a goatee, and I don't have tattoos. I'm pretty plain that way. Yes, you know, everybody knows he's a chef, and if you look at his Twitter handle, which I refer people over to him constantly, I'm like, no, he's got Chef Aaron. He's done that in his Twitter, Chef Aaron. Right,
right.
Chef Aaron Sanchez, and but mine's Aaron M. Sanchez. And I always make it a point to say Aaron Michael Sanchez. People, you know, wondered why, but it's because I'm branding Aaron Michael Sanchez, because I can't just be Aaron Sanchez. Plus, I think there's a baseball player named Aaron Sanchez, plus all the other Aaron Sanchez's in the world, right? So I guess when it comes to me, you know, yes, my social media is pretty clear. I'll put down, you know, I think I put down TV radio personality, entrepreneur. I forget what else I post, and that'll be the subtext. And everything I revolve around is around that.
All right. And knowing all that, and, you know, people, because I'm always intrigued with the business and the industry of it. And I know there's a ton of other people that, you know, are wanting to get a foot in the door. What do you think are some of the misconceptions in the industry and the business that that some people may kind of overlook or don't even have an idea of how things go down in the business?
That's a pretty broad question. I think the first thing that popped into my head when you said that was sometimes people think they sit back and think things will always come to them. Like, even though I said opportunities have come my way, yes, I have an audition. No, I haven't gone on job interviews in order to get the job. Like, the opportunities have come my way, but I always was willing to put in the work. There's a lot of work. Like, I know how to edit. I know how to do the work. I don't hand off. I can hand it off, and I do hand it off. But when I was first starting, I had to know not just the one thing. So I had to be not just the radio personality, but I had to learn how to do the recording, how to do, you know, and not just let the sound engineer do that. I'd ask him, oh, how did you do that? How did you put that in? Okay. And then even video, like, I had to learn that and learn the camera equipment. Learn, there are some people that are like, oh, I just want to do one thing. And I admire that. If you want to go work for somebody else all the time, then that is good. And there's a good living to be made out of that as well. But if you want to create opportunity for yourself and for others, it's important to take the legwork and the knowledge of editing. I remember talking to one reporter and I said, well, you know how to report, but do you know how to edit video? And they said, no. And I said, you need to learn, because even TV networks and news networks are cutting down. The misconception might be, oh, you only report, but now sometimes some reporters have to edit all their content, and it's actually easier nowadays with the equipment, with your laptops. You know, back in the day, you had to have a specialist, but, you know, some editors are even being let go if they don't know how to do editing and video and do the whole production. Now, that being said, if you want to be in front of the camera or, you know, and that may seem like a lot, but it's not, or just team up with somebody else that knows how to do it and doesn't know want to be on air, but team up. Don't go at it alone, like a lone wolf. Go at it in with a team of people that you can align yourself with. And I will say, all of the opportunities that come, or not just of my own, but it was the team that I would align myself with, and the people that I would that would automatically just, you know, come into my world, or I would go into their world, and we would help each other out. And there were times I've helped out other people. So don't live in your own bubble. Get out of your bubble and include others with you. And as a team, you'll go much further, much quicker than just as a lone wolf.
And network. I believe I'm a serial networker. So I think networking is a big deal that I think a lot of people kind of don't think they kind of take some of that stuff for granted. You know, I think networking is an important part of what you're doing, and also, like what you're saying, you know, to be in the right places at the right time and be seen by those that need to see you. Shake hands and kiss babies, you know, it's important.
And you know, it's so important to follow up. So many make a connection, collect a card, and then don't follow up. I always say, and you know, all my social media, including my LinkedIn, my Facebook, all that, like I will, if I can't follow up, I will link up with them so that I have a way to reach out to them if I need to again, right? Or if they need to reach out to me or ask for a favor or whatever, and connect others, you know. I remember first into this, I was just connecting people, you know, and I didn't hold on to, oh, well, what are you going to do for me? I knew that in the grand scheme of things, things would come my way if I would just continue to help other people. And I think that goes back to your thing earlier of the mindset of like give out information. I know God, the universe will give back in whatever way. I don't. So yeah.
Yeah, and it's one of those things, because I feel like I'm a connector as well, and I always plug up people with other people, and hey, here, I think this would be a good fit, and I kind of put people together to you know, whatever it is, whether it's to start a project or you know, like right now a friend of mine's putting together an event over here, and he's asking me, hey, can you get these guys to come and perform? And, you know, cool, yeah, it's easy, and it's just, it's one of those things you just do, and you know, sometimes you do it with nothing, like you don't expect anything in return. And then sometimes, you know, like, hey, there's some social currency there where, you know, I did this guy a favor, and I'm sure some point, you know, there may be something that I may need from this person. But I think just always be connecting is a big deal for me, you know.
Yeah, I remember one person said, I forgot what led up to it, but I'll never forget what he said. He said, well, what can you do for me? And I said, excuse me? what can I do for you? And I thought, wow, that's so limiting. Like, to look at people and say, what can they do for me, really limits the potential of what could happen. You go into networking things and ask, what do they need from, you know, what are they trying to pursue or what are they trying to connect to? It's amazing how much more you get from that mentality of just switching it and helping others. And then things just fall back to what, you know, you need to do. I'm a strong believer on that.
Yeah,
versus, well, I'm going to look at that person and see what they can do. There's a lot of people I've talked to and spent time with that can do nothing for me.
But
that's okay.
I agree.
That's, you know, what can I do and help them to maybe help others? And again, that's the mentality I try to have. I don't always have the time to do it, but I try to make the time to do it.
Yeah. And I'm always thinking too, even when I sit down, even in the smallest of meetings or whatever it may be, like, how can I help this person? How can I help them? Instead of how can they help me? You know, I'm just always thinking, well, hey, maybe I can do this for you. Maybe I can connect you with this person. And I just always, it's just that flipped mentality where some people just don't get it, you know, but.
Now, I will say, with caution, there is a moment where you need to be careful of when certain people will take advantage of that.
Oh, yeah.
And go to that next level of, well, now they just see you constantly handing them or being of help to them. That's a different situation. Right. Know when to draw the line. But if it's in your power to help, then do so, but not at your own detriment of now you can't pay your bills because you're helping other people, you know, left and right. And, you know, you're not focusing on something that you need to focus on, which is you. If you're always helping everybody else around you without considering what you need to do for yourself to either make a living or you know, then be careful of that. Be careful of that fine line, because sometimes people will take advantage of that, even in the industry. So be careful of that. But you know, again, that's why you surround yourself with people that you can trust and people that don't take advantage of you, and people that you know, are good people that you want to be around.
How important is it to have a strong team around you?
Very important. My team, we've worked together for a long time, and I know I can call them and depend on them, and they can call me and depend on me. I'm not always available, but when I am available, I make myself available. The team, like I said, don't go in as a lone wolf. And some make it as a lone wolf. I'm not saying not to entirely, but you go much further, much quicker with a good team. You know, it's like that thing that it says, you know, the people you surround yourself with, like take their income and take, then you'll be the fifth person in that income bracket or whatever they call it. But I think of it like surround yourself with people that know more than you, and you'll all help each other.
Yeah.
You'll learn from them. They'll learn from you. Go in with that mentality. Don't go at it alone.
Right. And you know, it's funny. I usually, every guest that I have on, I try to ask, hey, you know, when you were in this, you know, in the industry, you know, what's the best advice that you've gotten, you know, or that you give to anybody that wants to get in? But I feel like the whole show has been some awesome advice that you're giving everybody else. And you know, and it's great. You know, I'm over here writing down notes of all the stuff that you've been saying. But what about the advice that you've gotten? Has there been any advice that just have stood out to you that maybe you've had, you know, maybe a mentor, maybe your uncle or somebody when you were getting in the business? What's the best advice that you've received?
I will tell you, it was from a mentor, and his name is Paul Ling, and he told me this. He said, remember this, it is a marathon, not a sprint.
Wow, yeah.
And when I heard that, I said, you know, because I was like, because I think I wanted everything to be like quick now. I wanted, you know, I was just ready. I was like, and when I said, wait a minute, this is a marathon, like that means you're in it for a longer duration, right? The sprint is success right here, right now.
Right.
Well, sometimes that doesn't happen right here, right now. Sometimes there's steps. And if you look at anybody's career that's really big, you will find in talking to them that there were a lot of steps along the process. Very rarely, although it does happen, very rarely did they come out of school and end up a huge success overnight. It has happened, so I'm not going to take away from those people.
Yeah.
But more often than not, it is a journey. There are even films that are not made till about 7 or 10 years from the time that they were pitched. Because nobody listened to that person. And it took the 200th person to find that out. The show Survivor. If you listen to that story, it's very interesting how that got picked up. But it was dropped by one network and picked up by another. But the Mark Burnett had to go and prove by going out with the sales team that his concept was worth the advertisers picking up. And when he had enough advertisers believe in that, the network said, well, okay, we're gonna take care of this. We get it. But he had to do the legwork. He had to go and believe in it enough and then do the legwork to prove it.
Wow.
And so in a marathon, that's what you do. The sprints are like, you know, and that's why a lot of people give up in the business. Yeah. They're in for the sprint. They're not in for the marathon.
Yeah. And knowing that, like, you know, starting off, you know, when your uncle was like, no, you got to be in front of the camera. Now, did you feel like the different styles of, like, interview styles, like you being the person doing the interview and then having a co-host, is do you find that more challenging, or is that kind of more of an improvement because you can bounce back and forth? How do you feel about that?
Well, when I first started, I think you could even see some of the early workings of my YouTube interviews, and I would do it just one-on-one. So I would have it like this. It would just be a one-on-one interview. And that's how I first learned. And I thought it was more intimate, more engaging that way. When I wanted to go on the radio, though, I knew I wanted to bounce off of somebody else, because there's those moments where you want, you know, you're talking to the listener, the listener's listening to you, but you want to bounce off of somebody else as well. And so that's when, you know, I brought in my co-host, and I started new different shows, and I started playing with the format of, you know, three or four co-hosts. And then, you know, I would switch it around, and ultimately I ended up using Kelly Dolan for like ever since the beginning, really. And then I branched off to other co-hosts. I do like working off with other co-hosts, but I can also work independent on my own as well. And I think the different styles of people, the way they interact, is learn. You got to learn that. You have to learn the style and work well with the team. You can't be the person like, okay, follow my lead, and everybody else just go with it. You have to. There's a synergy that works. And if you're a giver, and you know how to give, you know how to take, and you will do it really well as a team, whether it be two or three people, versus just on your own running lone wolf. That's my advice. Yeah. If you're going from your own show to co-host. Now, I've been advised at the very start of doing radio, when you have more than one host, there's a lot of challenges of that in doing a show, because now you're not just doing it on your own time, you're doing it on other people's time, and sometimes that could be a challenge. But I think it adds flavor, and it rounds you out. Because if you could do it solo, then you could do it with other co-hosts, it opens up your ability to be on other TV shows or other shows or the program, and they can pull you in and use you, and you know how to find that groove of co-hosting.
Yeah. And have you been in a situation where you've gotten nervous around any of these, because you're over here on the red carpets, and you're doing it where some people are just, in a recording studio or in a radio studio. But, is there a point where you get nervous, or have you just grown past that as a broadcaster?
Well, okay. So, I come from theater, and I've always learned that in theater, even if you get nervous, you use that you channel that what I call energy into constructive use of it, right? So instead of getting nervous and being like, oh my God, I don't know if I can interview this person, you just use that energy to do the best job, right? You kind of channel it differently. Right. Does that mean like that I sometimes get a little like, I don't know what to say in front of the person? Has that happened? Yeah. Absolutely. Because sometimes you don't know who's going to be on the carpet, and all of a sudden somebody you've admired for many years. And I remember Cher walked onto the carpet, and I was like, oh my goodness, like it was a whole nother level. Billy Bob Thornton was on the carpet, and I was like, oh my goodness, it's Billy Bob Thornton. So there's moments of times where you're like, okay, but now get through this. It's an interview. Just have a conversation.
Right.
And that's why I tell myself to have a conversation. Get your, either get it out of the way or table it. Table your excitement. So when the camera stops rolling, right?
Right.
To be like, oh my God, I'm your biggest fan. table that. Get the interview in. Do it well. And then after, say, oh my God, that was the best thing. Like, thank you. But yeah, just. All I could say on that. Try to table it.
Is there been any interviews that you've done in the past where you just kind of freeze up and you're like, man, I don't even know what to ask next?
Have there been any interviews? I'm sure there have been. I remember, I think I talked about this before. Olivia Wilde. You know who Olivia Wilde is, right?
Yeah. Yeah, I think I heard you mention that. In Efren's
yes, I. Yeah, she walked onto the carpet, and she's gorgeous, and she's smart, and she's just amazing at every level. Plus, I loved watching House, so I was so used to her, like on House. And then all of a sudden, at that point, she mentions, "Oh, we're doing Tron," and I'm like, "Wait, I didn't even know Tron was going to be remade at the time." And I got a little like, I got giddy and happy and nerd boy at the same time. I'm not sure. That interview was the best of my time, and plus I was super self-conscious because I had at the time, now I'm giving out a lot of information, but at the time I had like an allergy to a cheese, and it had this like, it created like this big I don't want to describe it, but it was like I was like, oh my gosh, see that? Like, I was so self-conscious that it just, I don't think it was the best interview. And I just remember feeling very nervous on meeting Olivia Wilde. So there you go.
That's awesome. What about research? How important is research when you go into an interview?
If I have time to do the research, I will do it. There are some cases, like a red carpet, where you have no, you can plan the best by the tip sheet that they give you, and all of a sudden somebody is not on there, and you have to go at it just, you know, with what you know the listener or viewer is going to want to just hear, or you have to keep it sometimes broad and be open to listening and see what you could pick off of what the person is saying. Listening is very important. I think that's your best research. Sometimes interviewers, they interview to interview, but don't interview to listen.
Right.
So they have their questions, but they don't know how to piggyback off of something that the person said, which you might get something really juicy or really just very interesting from that person that you wouldn't have if you were just asking questions.
Right.
So, yeah.
Well,
I lost my train of thought.
That's all right. So in the growth of what you're doing in the industry, are we going to see you get into maybe acting or any other field in the industry?
You know, I've done a little bit of acting that has come my way, and I'm always open to acting. It was my first love, to be very frank, you know, in high school and you know, actually grade school too. So acting's always been there, but I do think that if that is to come, it will come because it's meant to. Otherwise, I need to focus on, you know, it's a very busy already just doing radio, doing, you know, hosting, but I'm open to it. So I, you know, if the universe wants to bring that my way, I will not shrug it away for absolutely, but am I actively pursuing it? Not at this time. Right now, we're really just trying to not only make the shows pop and get national attention and international attention, but, you know, it's, I think the next step really for me is with my business partners, we're launching a couple of television networks, and that has been my main focus as of right now.
Yeah, because I found a couple things on IMDb that you know, looked like you were in, and I was like, man, you know, I wonder if he's gonna take the dive into you know, the silver screen here and maybe see him on some more stuff. But it seems like, you know, acting would be kind of just, you know, natural for what you do. And then, you know, you tell me that you also did theater, you know, back in the day. It almost seems like it's just a natural thing that you would do next, you know?
Yeah, it's again, I would love it. I mean, I would love it. Let's just put it that way. There's no way I would ever turn away an opportunity like that. But at the time, I just can't go out and go on auditions and do what I know actors do on a regular basis to get leading roles and major roles. I know how much time is invested in that to make that happen. Okay. And if that comes my way, I'll be more than happy to share that. But, and I hope it does.
Yeah. And, you know, and when I heard you on Efren's podcast, I heard that one of your first times on a red carpet was interviewing some wrestlers. And, you know, I'm a huge wrestling fan. So tell me about your experience with the WWE stuff.
Well, yeah, that was my second red carpet. We were doing a Lifetime Movie Network premiere of Little Girl Lost, I think is what it was called. And the WWE publicist saw us. We didn't know he was a publicist for WWE. And he's like, hey, would you come and cover this event that we're doing on Venice Beach for the wrestlers? And I said, well, yeah, sure, of course. And me and my camera guy, my uncle, you know, we went and covered that, and it was a blast because I got to meet, you know, these wrestlers up close and personal. And I think some of those videos are still up on YouTube, but I thought I was going to use it, some of the video, for like the Ryan Seacrest challenge, but it didn't end up getting the Ryan Seacrest because I can't remember if it was a technicality that, oh, I was supposed to get waivers of these. I think it was for that. I was supposed to have important. Gotten waivers from those that I interviewed. Yeah. And I didn't know that at the time. I was like, oh, so I never was able to use it. So Ryan Seacrest probably never saw it. But, and so I never got onto his red carpet challenge. But, you know, when you say who inspires me, I've got to do a shout out to Ryan Seacrest, because that is a man. When people say, what do? I always say, you know, I, you know, when it comes to producing, it comes to hosting, it comes to radio, it comes to television, like, he is an example of someone that I've always looked at that has motivated me to continue doing what I do. Because if he can do it, then that means I can do it as well.
Yeah, you know, I agree. I love what he does. And just even on the production side, like, people don't know that he's, you know, responsible for some of the Kardashian stuff and all the other stuff that goes on the E! Network and a bunch of stuff. So I love what he does. And, you know, I got respect for what he does in the business. And, you know, that's definitely somebody, you know, I look towards too. And, hey, what's he up to next? You know, he's always got his hands in something.
Well, and funny little trivia, he and I share at least the same birthday, December 24th.
Oh,
so
nice.
I always find that little, you know, I remember when I first discovered that, and then I thought, oh, okay, maybe that's why I tend to be, like, you know, in that capacity. Maybe it's my birthday, but I don't think it's that. I just think it's a coincidence. But I do admire everything he's doing and has done. And when you look at how much work he puts in, he's an example of, you know, sometimes people say, well, you know, things are given to him. Well, but he works hard everything he does.
Yeah, he works.
You know, if you follow that man around, I think I read an interview about his day and the things he does. Now I get it. Doing the things, it is very time, you know, consuming and labor intensive, but, you know, look at his results.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, seeing him and even like Carson Daly, I know, you know, they both spend a lot of time both in front of the camera and, you know, on the radio. And same thing with Mario Lopez. And, you know, he's from my part of town here in San Diego as well. And you know, I kind of, you know, I look to those guys and you know, I've met Carson Daly a couple of times here and there. And he also spent some time here in San Diego on one of the radio stations here. So, you know, to me, I'm like, man, if these guys can make something happen out of San Diego, I'm like, you know, it's most likely, you know, some of these other guys can get up out of here and do something as well. So, yeah, I look to those guys too, and I love what they do. I respect the hustle more than anything because they are hustling. There's nothing that's given to them. Those guys are putting in the work to make everything happen for what they do.
Exactly, and because they're putting in the work, the opportunities do come away, right?
Right.
Like, would you agree with that?
Yeah,
because they're putting in the work. And so that's what I do want to preface what I said earlier, even though things have come my way and I realized things were, you know, easier, the doors were open easier. But that doesn't take away from the things that I had to do in order to be ready for whatever came my way. And that's what you see with each one of these. They put in the work. They put in the time. They're not just sitting back and saying, hey, when are the offers going to come in?
Yeah.
If you look at Ryan Seacrest, he's a producer. People may not think of him as that, but he is that, you know, and he thinks with that mindset. He knows how to syndicate. He knows how, you know, but again, when you look at his early career, a lot of time invested, you know, it really blew up with American Idol, but he was ready for it because he put in the time. And so I always base whatever I do, you put in the time, you put in the effort, and then the rest, you know, will work itself out.
Yeah, I agree. The hustle. Got to respect it. So, well,
exactly.
Aaron, I appreciate your time. I know I've taken way much more than expected, but you know, I think a lot of people that want to get in the business, and become, you know, broadcast journalists or just get in radio, whatever it is, I think they're going to learn a lot from this interview. So I really, really appreciate you sharing your wealth of knowledge with the listeners. So, you know, thank you so much for coming on and doing this.
Well, thank you for giving me the platform in order to do it, because I don't get to talk on this subject much. But thank you for allowing me to do that and to bring it to your listeners. And much success to you and everything you're doing. Thank you. I've had a great time.
No, thank you. How do the listeners find you on social media?
Yes, just simple. Aaron M. Sanchez on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter. When I talk about branding, by the way, that's another thing. Keep it consistent across all platforms. Don't use like a new code or a code name or something that's not your name. Use your name because you can, you know, cross it among all of them. So try to own your name on all the different platforms.
I agree. That's smart. Well, thank you, man. And hopefully when you get ready to launch any of the new ventures, you can come back and we can talk about it. And, you know, I appreciate everything you do and especially, you know, helping out those that want to get involved in the industry. You know, just you sharing the love is always a big deal. So thank you for everything you do. And, you know, we will talk soon.
You're welcome. Thank you. It's been a pleasure.
I appreciate you, brother. And there you have it, Aaron M. Sanchez. And make sure you check out everything he's doing. He's got a whole lot of stuff going on, producer, broadcaster, and you just got connected. We out of here.